Hello, it's Matt, and this is a Proud podcast. We are recording this at the end of April 2020, and we're still very much in the depths of the COVID-19 crisis. So I hope you and your loved ones are feeling safe and well. Most people will have had times of feeling a little bit anxious and a little bit stressed. So, what can we do about it? I'm very pleased to have in this A Proud podcast episode a gentleman that I've known for about 20 years. When I got interested in personal development, he was one of the first teachers I started to learn from. He very kindly agreed to speak with me and share his wealth of knowledge and experience. What we're going to talk about is how to prevent and deal with anxiety and stress. And here is a taster of what's coming up.
Prevent and deal with anxiety and stress, because stress can have various symptoms that people are experiencing, especially here at the moment, to do with the COVID-19 crisis. So it is valid to have worry at certain times. It can be valid to have anger. It can be valid to have sorrow. You know, all of these things are natural and healthy to have at certain times.
He has been involved with NLP for over 30 years. He runs one of the UK's longest established NLP training companies, running both open courses and in-house training for businesses and organisations. He's an accredited NLP psychotherapist, a hypnotherapist, a stress management teacher, and an NLP coach. Who is he? It's Frank Daniels from Frank Daniels Associates. He joined me via a Zoom call from his home in beautiful Derbyshire. Towards the end of the podcast, you'll hear him explain how you can get hold of his free Stress Buster guide. So let's jump straight into our chat, where he is explaining his aim for the session.
So what I'd like to do, I mean, my aim during our chat is primarily to give people some further both practical information resulting in some practical tools that people can use to address and reduce and deal with stress, to basically have greater well-being, or greater calmness, but that's both physically, emotionally, and therefore mentally as well, to be able to cope better with this whole situation. And not just for this situation, but in life in general. So what I was thinking is we could start with a bit of a background, a brief summary of what stress is, my take on stress, because this will then provide some context of the strategies for dealing with stress. Would that be all right?
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. So that'd be really useful for our listeners. So what is stress?
Yeah, okay. So most people will have heard of the fight or flight response. So fight or flight is the body's natural way of responding to an actual danger. As a way of explaining this, I like to tell a little story from our cave people ancestors' time. So if we imagine one of our ancestors called Ugg is out there in the wilds picking berries, hears a rustling in the bushes, and then out jumps a saber-toothed tiger. Now, the people who didn't have the fight or flight response, in other words, the triggering of stress chemicals such as adrenaline, cortisol, and noradrenaline, the ones who didn't have that, didn't get a sudden burst of energy and ended up being tiger lunch and didn't end up being our ancestors. So we all have this bodily response, this burst of these chemicals, the aim of which is to get the heart beating quicker, to pump the blood round quicker, to give us more energy to be able to hurl a big rock at the tiger or to be able to run away extra fast or run up a tree and survive. You know, and there's like the speed, sped up breathing and the heart going and the digestion, the stomach might have clenched up because the digestion is not needed and so on. All of that's natural, no problem with that when there's an actual physical danger. And then when the danger's gone, Ugg takes a deep breath naturally and kind of goes, glad that's over. Okay, so that's kind of the basic healthy response to an actual physical danger. Then as and animals have this as well. As human beings, we've got an extra additional thing, the imagination. So next day, Ugg's out picking berries again, hears a rustling in the bushes, remembers that this preceded the tiger, and now imagines the tiger is there jumping out. And if we imagine something vividly enough, it gives us the same response. As if the thing is really there, or a similar response. And just as an example of that, let me diverge for a moment and suggest this. Is it all right if we do like a little experiment with your listeners?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So what I'd suggest is if everyone sort of imagines that you've got, unless you're allergic to it, imagine you've got a really nice lemon in front of you. And I don't know if it's like a, so imagine you're holding it, you know, feel it, check how, is it a really big one? Is it smallish? How ripe is it? Is it really yellow, dark yellow, or has it got little bits of green on the end? Okay, and then put your lemon down like on a board, and as though you need a few slices for your gin and tonic or whatever, you get a nice sharp knife and you're going to cut it in half carefully and watch the juice squirting out or dripping out. And then you're going to take one of the halves of lemon, see it glistening with juice, and then you're just going to lick it. Now, when I do this with people like in live seminars, the vast majority of people get salivation in their mouth, and some people are even like screwing up their face as though they're biting into or licking a lemon.
Yeah.
So you know there's no lemon there really. However, the unconscious mind is using imagination. It's assuming, or it's triggering the same response. So going back to our example of Ugg, Ugg's imagined the tiger jumping out, already now gets the fight or flight response, and so that when the tiger does jump out, Ugg's already halfway up the hill or up the tree or has already picked up the rock, so it gives us this extra advantage. Of course, some days there's a little rustling in the bush, Ugg gets all worked up, gets the fight or flight response, and then a little bunny rabbit jumps out. And I go, oh, silly Ugg. However, just takes a deep breath, shoulders sink back down, and very rapidly triggers the opposite of the fight or flight response, the relaxation response, and no harm done. So this is not really stress. This is just the fight or flight response. What happens, though, is if we keep having this triggered on a regular basis and there's no counteraction to it and no release from it, it causes a number of potential symptoms in the body and in the mind. And this triggering, as I kind of implied, is not just from real actual physical danger. It can be from imagined danger, imagined real danger, shall we say, you know, like, well, obviously not a tiger or saber-toothed tiger anymore, but whether it's a mad axeman or, as in this current crisis, you know, there is real potential danger around. But it's also, for modern people, we equate emotional things like, I'm guessing quite a few people have had the experience of having to do some kind of public speaking, whether it's giving a presentation or maybe being in an interview or giving a speech. And as most people may know, public speaking is like, or used to be, the number one fear for people, above things like spiders and nuclear holocaust. And yet, there's no actual physical danger from public speaking. And yet people, through the imagining that the audience or the listeners may not like them, this equates to a fear, because there may be fear of rejection, fear of not being liked, and that will tap into deeper underlying things. And that's giving the same response as though there was a real danger there. So from this triggering of the fight or flight response over time, what we end up with is symptoms of stress, such as anxiety or worry or fear, anger with minor, smaller versions like frustration, annoyance. And we're not talking about just like a momentary thing, but if it's disproportional to the situation, can result in things like depression, change in appetite, overeating, difficulty sleeping, feeling tired, difficulty concentrating, feeling overwhelmed, changes in actions like procrastination or obsessive thinking about things, as well as a whole variety of physical symptoms such as digestive problems, dizziness, twitching, pins and needles, sexual dysfunction, muscular aches, back aches, so a whole range of things like that. And if people have got a predisposition in any one area, such as they tend to worry, or they've been having some self-doubt or self-sabotage in some area of their life, or they've been irritable in relationships, then being put under stress is going to make things worse. So we've all got like a certain stress threshold, or a certain tolerance to a certain amount of input. I like to imagine it like this, like a pressure cooker, you know, which we cook food in. So pressure cookers, you know, with the heat underneath, it increases the pressure. And a pressure cooker, ideally, then it has like a valve on top, and that lets some of the pressure out. Either you do it deliberately, or automatically when the pressure reaches a certain level, because it mustn't get too high a pressure, it lets some of the steam out of the pressure. It doesn't come out. However, if it does, if that valve is not functioning, if there's no release of the pressure, then the pressure just goes on building. And what's going to happen? Either the pressure cooker, the vessel, is going to start cracking up, or at some point it might explode. And these are some of the things that happen with people as well. Sometimes you don't see anything on the outside to begin with, but it builds up, and then either cracks appear, comes out in unwanted or negative emotions, or all these sort of negative thought patterns that we've talked about before, or negative feelings, or, you know, nothing happens, and then it comes out in one big thing, like some personal crisis or a breakdown. So that's kind of my background about stress. Was that, you got any thoughts or questions about that, Matthew?
Well, I think it's very detailed. So it seems to be something that all humans kind of we all experience in different ways. I think that's a really good metaphor and way of thinking about it. So this thing that's kind of natural, it's going on in our bodies, there's different chemicals going on, we've got our imagination going on. The key thing is that what are some useful ideas, tools, etc., that we can actually deal with this thing called stress?
Yeah, right, good. So when we're thinking about stress, the actual process of the stress, usually there's some kind of trigger, often on the outside. So in the present situation, you know, one of the things that is triggering is like things in the news and the whole virus situation.
Yeah.
And then we have an internal response. So it's not the thing on the outside, because it's not the thing inevitably on the outside that is causing the physical or emotional symptoms. It's the meaning we're making, the thoughts we're having about it. So, you know, there are some people, I know someone who's like, actually, you know, she's not happy about the situation, but in and of herself, she's totally coping very well, in a state of equilibrium. She's making good use of all the extra time. And, you know, we could say she's in a state of well-being and happiness. Whereas other people who are not physically being threatened, their family are okay, and yet they're in an excessive state of anxiety. So it's the inner bit, the thoughts, and often unconscious ideas and attitudes that people are having that then trigger the feelings. So there's different ways then to address this. A, if one can, it's do something about the trigger itself. So if in pre-crisis times, in pre-COVID-19 times, stress was being caused by commuting 2 hours a day to work, and sitting in the traffic or sitting in the public transport was causing a buildup of stress, then one thing could be, can I do anything about spending 2 hours a day commuting? Well, a lot of people have had that forced on them now anyway. So, you know, that's one thing you can think, can I do anything about what's on the outside? Secondly, it's then thinking, how can I change my response to what's triggering what's on the outside? I might not be able to do anything on the outside. I might not be able to do anything about the health situation, the government situation, the financial situation, the family situation. What can I do about my response? How can I change my thoughts and feelings? So here are some ideas. So there's things we can do on our inner thoughts, like think more positively, check and address obsessive negative thoughts. And then there's certain like visualizations one can do to become calmer, for instance, and counteract stress. And then there's things, you know, like if we go back to the analogy of the pressure cooker, you know, the pressure builds up until it reaches a certain threshold, and then that pressure needs to be released. So there's things we can do to decrease the stress threshold, so that it's going to take a lot longer before it actually turns into stress. So things to decrease the amount of pressure. I mean, there's things that are totally like on the government websites, and they're on the television on an almost daily basis, like exercising. So this is being recommended for health anyway, and it's a great way of counteracting stress and anxiety. Eating a healthy, balanced diet, reducing sugar, because sugar is actually triggers increase in blood pressure, things like that. Reducing caffeine, getting enough sleep, enough good quality sleep, and if people are still smoking, basically stopping it if you can. So these are just like practical physical things that will affect the body, will affect the biochemistry of the body to counteract the stress response. And then there's things like doing deep breathing, which we can come back to, and doing a relaxation process, something, I mean, those two things kind of go together. So by deep breathing, I mean, this is a really probably one of the simplest and most powerful things that people could do without having to learn anything complicated. So by deep breathing, what I mean is abdominal breathing. In other words, it's deep down in the body rather than having to be a massive in-breath. So most people, if you say, okay, take a deep breath, what happens is their lower abdomen pulls in and they breathe big into the chest, which can give us like a burst of energy, but it doesn't counteract the stress response. Whereas if we breathe into the lower part of the lungs, and what that looks and feels like is, and one way of practicing this, if people aren't used to it, and it's not, you know, I'm not unique in saying this because it's taught in yoga, certain martial arts, I think it's taught in like antenatal clinics and things like that. It's basically one way of learning it is to put a hand on the abdomen, like where your navel is or a bit lower, and it's breathing slowly, deliberately into that part, or imagining that there's a balloon down there and that balloon is inflating as you breathe in. In other words, it pushes the belly area out, and then as you breathe out, that area goes in, and the chest area, the upper chest, remains pretty much where it is without expanding and contracting. What this does is, oh, and added to that is ideally breathing out slower than one breathes in. So naturally, when we're in a state of excitation, whether that's excited or anxiety, we're typically breathing fast and we're breathing in more into the upper part of the chest. When we are naturally calm and relaxed, as babies and little children are after they've been busy playing, and then they're kind of really relaxing or going to sleep, or we can also see it in like dogs and cats. I mean, cats are masters at relaxation. So, you know, after they've come in from chasing outside and they're just lying there, if you watch how they're breathing, you can see often the abdomen, the lower abdomen, is moving in and out rather than the upper chest. So this is the breathing that's associated with calmness and relaxation. And by deliberately breathing in this way, down there, and slower on the out-breath than the in-breath, it tends to trigger the relaxation response. In other words, it's counteracting the fight or flight, the stress response, and it's enhancing and bringing on a state of calmness. I've done this, for instance, on a class I led for a group of stressed out teachers. And in the first of a number of sessions, in the first session we did, the main thing that I taught them practically was this kind of breathing. So we practiced it a little bit. And then I tasked them with doing 40 of these deep breaths throughout a day. They didn't have to do them all at once. You know, they could split it like, every time the telephone rings, before answering it, take one slow breath. If it's driving around, when you're at a traffic light, instead of tapping your fingers and going, come on, come on, take some deep breaths until it's a red light, while it's a red light. So spreading that throughout the day. And a week later, 19 out of 20 of them who had practiced this said they were feeling a lot calmer just from doing these 40 abdominal breaths a day. So that's one quick, powerful way. If people have never done this before, it can require a little bit of practice, because it can seem unnatural, even though we're having to relearn a natural way of breathing. And if you've done a few deep breaths and you feel yourself feeling lightheaded or kind of a buzzy, it means because you're getting all this extra oxygen. So just stop for a while. Maybe don't do the breaths quite as full. Relax a bit, little bit more, and then come back to it again a bit later. Okay, another really powerful way of addressing the stress threshold by working on the body, working on the biochemistry of the body, is to do some kind of relaxation process, ideally doing this every day. So something like meditation or mindfulness, or personally, I really like doing some form of self-hypnosis every day. And doing that typically induces a state of relaxation in and of itself. And one can enhance it by doing a visualization, particularly that can help the immune system. So earlier I said the effects of stress, it causes various things like anxiety, anger, depression, mental things. It has an effect on the body. One of the things I didn't mention is that the chemicals, the cortisol, adrenaline, noradrenaline, they also have a detrimental effect on the immune system. So they reduce the production of white blood cells. So anything we can do to counteract stress will boost the immune system, inevitably. It will help our overall health in that way. And there's a particular visualization that one can do that research, particularly in the field of psychoneuroimmunology, has shown that we can boost the production of the white blood cells. So just very briefly, this kind of visualization involves firstly relaxing and then imagining oneself being filled with a white or golden white light. We could go into more of that, Matthew.
I think the best thing would be, because the time of the podcast and some people might be driving or operating different things while they listen to this podcast, I think what would be a really good idea is if at the end of the podcast, our professional podcast listeners can have your details. So we'll leave your email and perhaps your website, so that if people want that technique in more detail so that they can spend a bit of time and really get the most out of it, then is it okay if people can get in contact with you for that?
Yeah, okay, fine.
All right, brilliant.
So, I mean, I mentioned earlier the other way, or broad way, of addressing stress is to deal with the thoughts, the meaning that we're making about what's happening on the outside. So how we think and what we think is going to be triggering the feelings that will then trigger the bodily responses.
Is this when you were saying about thinking positively?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So thinking negatively is a very broad term, but in general, I would define that as having thoughts that give us feelings that we don't like and don't want. And it doesn't mean they are, should we say, bad thoughts. And I don't want to say we should never have thoughts that are, should we say, unpleasant. So it is valid to have worry at certain times. It can be valid to have anger. It can be valid to have sorrow. You know, all of these things are natural and healthy to have at certain times. It's just if one's having them excessively, unhelpfully, if it's getting habitual, there, and it's giving us this stress response, which is also then potentially going to be affecting our physical health, then I'd say they're not useful. So one way of adjusting our thoughts, this is kind of one of the most basic ways, a typical habit that people have when faced with things that either could be going wrong or have gone wrong is to think about what they don't want. I mean, it's fairly natural, and I'm not saying one should never do that, but it's like, it's either dwelling on, oh God, I'm feeling the situation is really bad, or I'm feeling bad, I'm feeling really worried. This is worrying. And it's kind of like complain, moan, I don't want this. So one way of counteracting what I'm calling here negative thinking or excessive focusing on the negative is to actually turn it into something more positive by asking oneself a question. Primarily the question is either, what do I want, or what do I want instead, or what would I rather have, or how would I rather be, how would I rather feel, depending on the situation. So if you've got a feeling and it's got, oh, I'm so worried, it's like, take a breath, maybe first abdominal breath, just to focus, realize that you're speaking negatively. And the issue with focusing on the negative in language is what we phrase, what we're talking about is what we will think about and what we will feel about. So for instance, while I'm just describing this, I could say to you, don't think about a blue elephant wearing giant black sunglasses. And what's the first thing one has to do is think about a blue elephant wearing giant black sunglasses. So if I say, I don't want to be stressed, I don't want to feel anxious, if we're using that phrase, feel anxious, because the unconscious mind doesn't process a negation, the don't bit, nearly as fast as the tangible bit, the blue elephant, or I don't want to be anxious, then the body is having to make a representation of that, has to think about anxious, oh, I know what that is, and it will to some degree, even if it's just a small degree, tend to trigger that. And if we keep doing that habitually, it'll trigger it a lot. So if we're going, I don't want something, we can then go, okay, what would I rather have, or how would I rather feel? And we want to turn it into a positive. So not like I'd rather feel less anxious, because that's still got the word anxious in there. We want to turn it into, I'd rather feel calm, or calm and chilled, or confident, or have a positive outlook. And this is not about denying any problems happening. We totally want to acknowledge that. We want to act on it, that, you know, it's fine to have concerns. But we also then want to think, you know, how do I want to be instead? It could be, I want to be proactive, or I want to be careful. I want to be concerned. Or if it's in the family, rather than, God, I'm feeling so irritable. Or why are we having so many arguments? I don't want to have so many arguments. What do I want? I want to have peace and harmony. I want to be tolerant. Once we've phrased it and thinking about it in the positive, we could then check that it's something that's within our control. So this is not always relevant. If I say, I want to be calm, well, that's about me, so that's within my control. But if I said, for instance, I want people to like me, or I want my spouse or my kids to do what I tell them to do, well, good luck with that. But although that's phrased in the positive, it's not something that's totally within my control because they are other human beings. So then I could say, okay, that's what I would like, or I would like greater harmony in my family. Well, it's very broad and it's to do with the family. And, you know, your family are individuals. So then we could say, okay, that's what I would like. What is there within that that I could do to bring that about? In other words, what is within my control? What am I responsible for? And if it was like the harmony in the family, then I might say, I could be a better listener. I could be more loving, caring, tolerant, for instance. So then the goal, your goal becomes, my goal is to be loving, caring, tolerant, a good listener. And then the third step is to check, would there be any negative consequences of me being like this, just achieving this goal? Any negative consequences for me or any negative consequences for other people? You know, so if you were to say, okay, my goal is to be ultra confident, would there be any downsides to that? Well, maybe. Maybe if I was that confident, I wouldn't be open to feedback. I wouldn't learn things. I would not notice any actual problems, maybe. But it's just to take those things into account and then adjust the goal based on those things. So it might be, I want to be really confident whilst still being open to feedback and caring. And once you've phrased that in the positive, that's already going to start triggering more positive images in your mind that will trigger a more positive state, emotional state in your body. And then as a last step, you could also think, okay, that's my goal. How this is like all of this is related to coaching, basic core coaching questions. So what do you want? Check in any negative consequences and then thinking, okay, how could I achieve it? What could I do to actually get this? And then take some steps. What are some of the first steps I could do to get it? I mean, if you'd said, okay, I want to be calmer instead of being anxious. Any downsides to being calmer? Well, don't want to be totally chilled out all the time. Some of the time I want to feel excited, really bubbly. But in general, as a sort of underlying thing, I want to be calmer. Yeah, that's fine. That sounds good. How could I achieve this? Well, I don't know. Maybe I could do some deep breathing I've just been learning about. Maybe I could do a visualization. Maybe I could research it on the internet. And so, okay, what's the first thing I'm going to do? I'm going to practice doing 40 abdominal breaths throughout the day. So that's kind of a simple thing that people can do to be more positive. There are other things one can do for like letting go of obsessive negative thoughts, whether they're thoughts from the past or worries about the future. But what I'm thinking is it's kind of a bit too in-depth for this so-called chat that we haven't been having with me talking so much. And if people want to know more, then they're welcome to ask me. And you know what you mentioned at the beginning, Matthew, that there was going to be this giveaway that I've got for people. Shall I mention that now?
Yeah, that'd be great. Please. All right.
So what I've got is a 7-page, I don't know what you call it, guidelines, information sheet. It's about stress. It's covering quite a few of the things I've been talking about, a bit about what stress is with some little diagrams, but also goes into more detail of how to let go of disappointment, frustrations, annoyances, worry thoughts, and it goes into more detail of how to do the visualization, the white light visualization for boosting the immune system. So right. If people want that, I know you're going to put my email address up. Shall I give you that now?
Yeah, please do, Frank. So, if people want to find out more, how do they get in contact with you?
It's both for this this sheet, this stress information sheet. But, you know, even if people don't want that, you're welcome to contact me at Frank Daniels Associates. That's my name, frankdanielsassociates.co.uk.
That's brilliant, Frank. You've been so generous with your time. And I'm sure lots of people will be getting in contact with you for that free. But what did you describe it as? It's not a stress buster, is it?
Well, it isn't a stress buster. It's actually something I wrote some time ago for a workshop actually called Stress Busting that I ran, and I've kind of just updated it for the current situation. I don't know, anti-stress guidelines or stress busting guidelines. There we go, we could call it that. Stress busting guidelines.
So helpful today. You've got some real practical ideas and things for people to try with the breathing. And if they want more details about that visualization exercise, you started explaining about the UGG and the cave people and why we've got stress and the different chemicals and things. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we end this episode?
Okay. So what I'd just like to say, sort of in summary, and I'm not unique in this because a lot of people have been saying this kind of thing. At the moment, if you're listening to this still whilst we're on the health COVID-19 crisis, we're kind of in a unique situation which potentially is causing people stress and anxiety. However, it's also potentially a situation where people can do things like take stock. They can focus on having greater balance in their life. Some of that may be being forced from the situation to spend more time at home. They've got more time, giving people time for leisure or family or personal development, spiritual development activities to focus on their health and well-being. So potentially, this is, as I said, time for re-evaluation, out of which a lot of good things can come. So I'd really invite people to do some things for your own well-being. And I wish you all to stay well psychologically and, of course, physically. So stay safe, stay well, be your best. Yeah, and that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
Again, I would like to thank Frank for sharing some of his thoughts and practical ideas on how to help us prevent and deal with anxiety and stress. If you like this podcast episode, then feel free to share with those you care about. If you haven't already, then subscribe now so you don't miss out and always get the latest episode. Thank you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Matthew Broomhead, and this is a Proud Podcast.